Coming up next on This Week in Computer Hardware, are AMD's Radeon HD 7770 and 7750 the best new bargain GPUs? Is Intel delaying Ivy Bridge again? Is Apple quashing Ultrabook manufacturers? A great home theater PC motherboard and the best feature in Intel's 520 SSD? It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 157, recorded February 16th, 2012. Ivy Bridge is anti-consumer.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit.
Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm Patrick Norton, joined as always by the benchmarking man himself, who is actually happily located at home, Mr. Ryan Shrout. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. We have an interesting project that we're working on here. We've been talking about before removing offices and that kind of stuff, but we don't. Our fiber internet's not going to be in until the end of March. And we don't want to sign a new contract with like cable or the phone company or something like that to get internet. So tomorrow we're going to test the length limits of Ethernet runs.
They're longer than you think.
We're looking at about 320 feet.
Well, worst case scenario, I'm trying to think. I've done at least 100 meters. Gosh.
Yeah. We're right at the 100 meter kind of limit there. So we're going to see. I'm going to go buy a spool of cable and, you know, see what we get. I don't know.
It's always really frightening.
We'll see what all the people in the other buildings, when they look out their windows and they see me pulling a blue Ethernet cable across the ground through the woods, more or less. See how that works out.
If you want to drop down to 10 megabits per second, you should be good for 500 meters.
That's fine. The issue is we don't want to, I mean, we're talking about an internet connection. So if we can get 10 megabits, that's more than enough. So I'm fairly confident we'll get it to work as long as nobody comes and cuts the grass in the next 6 weeks. It should be fine here.
Sorry, I'm envisioning like this cable, like going from like building to building, house to
that's
house.
What it's doing. Yeah.
You could do a wireless bridge if you're feeling really crazy.
Oh, I don't feel like spending that much money. I can get a spool of cable for $50. That's 1,000 feet, and you know, make sure I try that first. But we looked up some kind of the high powered directional antennas and that kind of stuff, and they're about $100.
I got a box of them. See, I can loan you like 214 dBi directional antennas. You'd be shocked. I went through a Wi-Fi hacking phase and I couldn't get it across the bay because we had some aiming issues, but a mile, 3 miles, we're good.
Yeah, I'm talking 100 yards, maybe 110.
I can nail that, dude.
All right, we'll talk after the show then. That sounds interesting.
AMD Radeon HD 7770 and the 7750 Cape Verde GPU preview. Shiny new boards, not fully tested, sir?
No, these are fully tested. They are. Okay. Of course, it's a week where we have a show, so there has to be a graphics card launch. that's kind of the rule.
It's Thursday. There's a new GPU somewhere, right?
Exactly. So the Cape Verde GPU is based on the same architecture as the 7970 and 7950 that we talked about back in January. The same Southern Islands architecture, only this is a much smaller version. This is the $159 and $109 parts. You can see the $159 part that I'm holding up here is kind of, it looks like a mainstream graphics card. It's not huge, doesn't have, it's only got a single power connector on it. It still has, because of the AMD connectivity options, it's still got great connectivity, dual link DVI, HDMI 2 display ports. It runs very power efficient. It's a $159 card. The problem for this particular card is that there's a lot of competition in this sub $200 graphics card market. Even from AMD and NVIDIA, AMD themselves rather, and NVIDIA. NVIDIA has the GTX 560, which is about $30 more than this, and they have the GTX 550, which is about $30 less than this. and the performance is about 20% lower for the lower cost card and higher for the higher price card, kind of as you might expect. And you know, so that kind of scales where you'd think it should. The unfortunate part is we kind of had hoped that with this new architecture, new brand new GPU, mm-hmm. that they would be able to improve on the performance per dollar metric. But they aren't really improving on it. They're just kind of putting it in a spot. And compared to their own product line, they're actually behind in performance per dollar because the Radeon HD 6850, which is, you know, last generation's architecture, costs the same but performs a little bit better. So
that's not so good.
It's not so good. So, you know, AMD's kind of answer is, hey, well, BARTs is end of life. They're not going to be in the market for very much longer. I understand that. And when BARTs is gone, which is the code name for the 6800 cards, when that GPU is gone, the 7770 will be the best card from AMD in this price market. But we talk about, you know, we write reviews and we talk about, we have the show every week, so we get to update every week. Today, it's not the best card for your money, even if you're an AMD fan, even if you want to stick in the AMD ecosystem. Now, the other card I think is more interesting, which you might not believe this for me because I tend to be the high-performance guy. The 7750, this one. So this little guy, you know, it doesn't even have a complete heatsink shroud or anything like that. It is a single-slot design. It still has support for three outputs. Actually, has support for six technically, but those DisplayPort hubs have never really come to fruition yet. But what you'll notice here is that if you look at the card, there's no external power connection. It runs purely off PCI Express bus, no external power. Also, no Crossfire connection, which is kind of a letdown there. But this is a $109 card. It won't surprise me if in a month you can find this for $99, you know, with rebates or whatever.
Do you think they killed the Crossfire connection on that just to prevent people from going, geez, I can double the performance of this car and beat a 7700 or one of the slightly higher cards for $200 and running Crossfire?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's yes. And the you'll notice actually when you look at this one, the 7770, it has a single Crossfire connector. The previous generation 6700 cards had two, so you could run three and four GPUs in a single system. With this one, you can run only two. What's interesting about that is you're exactly correct. The reason they don't like to do that is because there's this kind of value discrepancy in the GPU market now where the 250 and below market is very competitive, so people are lowering prices and that kind of stuff. Whereas if you look at the $250 and above market, there's not a lot of competition and the graphics cards are spread out. Mm-hmm. So my guess is that if you had three of these 7770s, you'd be able to, you know, you're talking about $360 worth of video cards, that you might have the performance of a $450 card very easily. And so one of the ways they're trying to prevent that is by kind of removing that feature. And the same thing is probably the case here. But even still, this card, the 7750, uses only 55 watts of power under load, and it was able to play almost every game at 1080p with like our standard benchmark suite of settings. The only game that had a little problem with was Battlefield 3, as you might expect. We were able to run 1080p at medium quality settings over 40 frames per second, I believe, on this little card, which is really impressive. And it doesn't require external power. It's by far the most power efficient GPU we have. I think it actually uses like half the power of the GTX 550 Ti to get a similar level of performance, and it costs about $30 less as well. So this card is a much better example of what the new architecture can do in terms of advancing price per dollar and price per watt, or I'm sorry, performance per dollar and performance per watt than I think the 7770 is, which is a little bit kind of odd because the 5770 from AMD two generations ago is still the most popular card on the Steam hardware survey. It's the most popular DX11 card on there. That was a wildly popular card. And we were kind of hoping the 7770 was going to be, you know, that same thing where it was a great performance and pricing segment, but it didn't really make the jump we were hoping for. Overall, it's an impressive thing. It's an impressive kind of sweet family of products.
So it sounds like the 7750 might be the ultimate kind of home theater card, as long as you don't want to play some of the more high-end games or newer games. 7770
is more like... Yeah, I mean, you can play Skyrim on it. You can play Battlefield on it. Battlefield 3 at medium quality settings is still pretty nice to play, right? And we're not talking about running 25 frames per second or anything like that. It was able to run at really good frame rates. And for home theater PC, the only kind of negative to it, because it is a single slot design, you run into this issue where the heat sinks aren't as big, the fans aren't as big. They have to spin faster because of that to cool the GPU. And so this card is actually louder than this card by a pretty noticeable margin, which is kind of a letdown. But that's the case. The other thing I will mention is the 7770 is the first GPU to ship with a 1 gigahertz reference clock speed, which AMD is trying to make a big marketing deal of. I don't think it's that big a deal. We've gone over this for years. Clock speed doesn't really matter. It's all about the performance. But it is interesting to note at the very least. And we did get we got a couple of retail ones. This XFX unit is clocked at 1120 megahertz out of the box. Right. So, I mean, that's a pretty hefty clock speed bump for such a small GPU. So it's interesting. In this price range, it's kind of a interesting shift to see.
It's funny always watching stuff in that $100, $50 to $100 price range start to move around. It's kind of funny. A lot of keyboard action going on. People at Rosewill, the house brand for Newegg, came up with mechanical Cherry Switch based keyboards. There's been a lot of people talking about that. A bunch of friends might have been buying them. And now we're going to talk about a keyboard dock. a product category I thought was completely and utterly dead. But it's not exactly the keyboard dock you would think it is. It's the Asus Transformer Prime, the TF201. And basically, this is the one with the really slick pop-out keyboard adapter. Not the one we saw at CES, but no, another product.
This is the same thing, actually.
Okay.
This is the add-on dock to the Asus Transformer Prime.
Sorry, I'm thinking of we saw one of the Ultrabooks we saw at CES. One of the Ultrabooks I saw at CES actually had sort of you pressed a button and the ports kind of ratcheted down from the back of it. And this is actually a plug-in dock for one of the E-pads from Asus.
Right. Okay. So Twitch at CES, we showed I think this exact same unit, the Transformer Prime running Tegra 3 processor. With the keyboard dock, we played some games and stuff on it. We had already posted a review. Matt Smith, who does our mobility stuff, did a review of the tablet itself. We hadn't had the keyboard peripheral in yet, so we posted a review of that. And what was interesting, what put it in here to discuss was, have you used the Transformer Prime with its keyboard attachment at all?
I have not.
On any of the iterations? Okay, because one of the things, I kind of wanted some feedback on whether or not you thought a keyboard and touchpad addition to an Android tablet, even one running Ice Cream Sandwich, would really make it a productivity device. Like, does adding a keyboard dock to an iPad really make it a productivity device? Is it something you're interested in? Or do you think
I bought a Bluetooth keyboard pretty soon after I bought my first iPad, because I touch type, and I touch type fast, like 60, 80 words a minute. It's been a long time since I took a touch typing test, but it's incredibly painful for me to try to sort of hunt and peck on that keyboard on the screen on any device, iPad, Android, or otherwise. So for me, a Bluetooth keyboard makes a big difference. The docks have been really frustrating from a lot of the aftermarket docks have been really frustrating. A lot of the aftermarket keyboards have been really frustrating. This one actually looks like it's a decent 88% plus keyboard with a standard layout, which is a huge deal for me, because there's nothing worse than having somebody be like, yeah, we made this really stylish, keyboard that goes with your insert whatever brand of tablet here, but it's unusable because they put like the delete key where the shift key is on most devices or something equally hideous. there's a really cool Apple sort of keyboard dock designed to charge your iPhone and then turns your iPhone into an extra touchpad, which was fantastic. But the way they jerked the keyboard layout, I couldn't actually use it because they ended up putting, I want to say, one of the major backspace keys or something where the delete key normally is, and it made the keyboard functionally unusable without a massive sort of rejiggering of how I use my pinky when I type. So this is interesting. So the dock in this case, though, the Transformer Prime, not that I think people don't enjoy talking about random Bluetooth keyboard hell, but so this actually has an extended battery, acts as a full keyboard, and it's interesting. We're looking at a pretty healthy, like 200 plus minute increase in performance. We're looking at the Peacekeeper battery test, the YouTube streaming Wi-Fi battery test. I think maybe even more dramatic, going from like 30% brightness. So you're 456, like a 300 minute increase. That's a healthy increase in battery life, probably making it worth the additional pain of carrying it around.
And I actually like the form factor when it's attached better than without, right? Because without you worry about scratching the screen and that kind of stuff. It's kind of like the old adage of why some people like the flip phone stills, because when you close it, it's locked. You don't have to worry about ruining any of the keys or the screen or any other kind of stuff. You get the same idea when the tablet and the dock are connected. It's like a netbook. It's like an ultrabook or whatever term you feel like using this week, in form factor at least. So
it's a good thing.
It is, and it's not an exorbitant amount of money extra. I think it's like a $250 addition. So it's not something you need right away, but it's an interesting add-on for those types of devices.
It will be interesting to see. It's kind of funny, right? Because the rumors iPad 3 are coming, maybe new Apple TV coming. It's been funny to watch the next version of Android people are starting to talk about online. We've also been getting a lot of questions lately, both at Techzilla, the main show I do, probably at PCPer.com, and certainly on Twitch, about Ivy Bridge. And Ivy Bridge looks like it's being pushed again. What's going on with that? Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, yeah, we can talk about this one, too. There are two kind of interesting stories going on, both of which I would consider anti-consumer. This one that we're going to talk about is Intel delaying shipments of the Ivy Bridge processors. And here's why I consider it anti-consumer, is because they're not really delaying it because they have a problem with the production or they have a problem with the performance. They need to tweak anything or anything like that. The new rumor at Digitimes is that they are going to delay Ivy Bridge. They're going to release Ivy Bridge in early April, which has kind of been the plan. They're going to hold off on full shipments until after June because of all the inventory they still have with Sandy Bridge and all their vendors still have with Sandy Bridge platforms. I took the stance in this little story that this is kind of what happens when there's no major competitor, right? AMD has some competitive parts with Llano in the mobile market, but if you look at Ivy Bridge, it's going to dominate the market. We know it's going to dominate the market in the desktop and in the mobile side. There's no reason for them to hurry this out the door necessarily. They could have it ready and hold on to it for however length of time they wanted to do. And without that competition, they're able to, I'm trying to remember the wording I used in this, they're able to adjust their product schedule based on internal financial reasons rather than external consumer forces, which is basically me just trying to say, either the consumer can use this performance and would like the advantages and power and battery life that it offers, Intel is not going to see any financial benefit to it, so they're not going to do it. Whereas if AMD were there with another product coming out in that quarter or the next quarter that would rival what Ivy Bridge could do, they would be pushing hard to get that out the door and into as many people's hands as possible.
This is, of course, when certain people are leaping to their keyboards and basically pointing out that you're a communist and you're against profits and you're against, capitalism in the American way. But the truth is, as much as I like to tease both of us about our obviously anti-capitalist leanings. By the way, if you've ever met Ryan in real life, trust me, we love the capitalism. Me especially, because I got to travel behind the Iron Curtain before it fell. And let me tell you something. Dynamism sucks on every level, especially if you actually like gaming performance. But the point I was getting to is that this you know, Ryan's absolutely right. When you get to a position where one company has such a commanding lead in its field, they can basically be like, yeah, you know, Ivy Bridge, not as impressive as we would have liked. And Sandy Bridge, we still got a bunch of stuff in the channel, so we're just going to sit on it. And, you know, because it's not entirely to Intel's advantage for AMD to go away, right? Because if AMD goes away, then they are kind of the sole person in the market, and somebody somewhere is going to sue them for that, right? Not because it's necessarily necessary, but just because it's just if there's not a major competitor, people get pissed. But it's going to be interesting to watch because AMD has basically ceded the high ground, accepted that they've kind of moving in a different direction, that they can't keep up with Intel's engineering. Just the flat out raw, I think, amount of money Intel has to hurl in engineering, I don't think anybody can compete with at this point. And I think I don't think it's going to be, you know, we've been in a position where Intel basically had weak competition in the past. And yeah, you know, it kind of sucks to be buying computers at that. The flip side, though, is that you're getting such a ridiculous amount of performance for your money at this point. It's kind of hard to get too upset about it. Like I'd like to be, you know, we had somebody asking on Techzilla about, you know, should I wait for Ivy Bridge? I'm like, eh. You know what I mean? I'm not seeing it. Like, great, you're going to pay more for a motherboard, and oh yeah, there's not a really huge performance jump over Sandy Bridge. Like, we've been spoiled for the last couple iterations of processors, or at least it
definitely
feels that way.
That's definitely the case. No, I mean, that's definitely the case. I'm just of that mindset of progress will eventually slow down to where we don't have the progress that we need, right? And I am always trying to prevent that in whatever way I can. So if this little jab helps at all. Because if you look at that, the roadmap that's posted with that story, actually, look at the very top line, the extreme section, actually the top of the extreme and of premium performance. That's Sandy Bridge E. That's a product that launched earlier in the year, and it is unchanged throughout all of 2012. Why is that? That's because the AMD high-performance processor is gone, all right? It's never coming back.
Right.
And Intel has the best performing part, and they're going to have the best performing part, and there's no reason for them to do that. I mean, if they're going to continue to sell it, they'll just continue to sell it as it is. You know, and there needs to be, as if there's one thing that Apple has proven and all these other, you know, these companies have proven, that when somebody is there to push people in a certain direction, there will be change in that way. But what is also of kind of
when being pushed.
Yeah, exactly. This is another story that's kind of, if this one's more anti-consumer than the previous one. The rumor,
I don't think
another
this is
rumor.
Anti, okay, don't I, think I don't so? Think this is particularly anti-consumer. I think this is particularly, this is kind of brutal. So Asus Tech, one of the many companies making Ultrabooks, Pegatron Technology, oddly enough, which is a company that was spun off from Asus Tech, been manufacturing Asus Tech's Ultrabooks, or Asus, right, is going to stop manufacturing Ultrabooks because they picked up a Apple contract, and Apple's like, we don't really want you making these Ultrabooks. If you want the long dollar from the Big Apple and the capital infrastructure investment and the huge amount of supplies, you're not going to be making Ultrabooks for a PC manufacturer. So here's the thought. So, you know, Adrian Kingsley Hughes at ZDNet says this is BS. This is not legit. This is not a legit story. You know, one of the arguments that Scott makes at PC Purr is that, you know, look at all the crap that Apple's fighting with Samsung, HTC, Google. They're obviously divesting away, and it feels like they're moving away from Foxconn. While they're on one hand, and something we probably should talk about is Apple's basically hired an independent agency to investigate conditions at the manufacturers in China. And one of the initial reports is from this didn't fill me with a lot of sort of what's the word I'm looking for here? I would, you know, when the president of the organization that's been brought in to investigate worker condition goes basically like, gosh, this sucks so much less than garment factories where it's loud and there's big machines and there's, you know, bits of fabric and stuff. This is really zen-like. And you know, I think monotony and boredom are the big challenges here.
you know, it's hard to get a job in mainland China, and people are scrapping really hard for them. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the thing on this story is, what particularly gets me here is you could see this in a less negative way if ASUS went to these guys and said, hey, we want you to make our iPads, but we're going to need all of your capacity, and we're going to outbid what ASUS is paying for your manufacturing capacity. And that's maybe how it happened, but it's being construed differently. You know, because Apple tends to be a good target for negative press from PC-based media. But the idea that you said that the ZDNet author here says that Apple cannot push its weight against manufacturing and design companies and risk burning bridges is absolutely false.
Yeah, right.
It is absolutely false. I mean, yeah. I know from so many people that have talked about SoC designs and panel manufacturers and that kind of stuff, where they very much do pull their weight around and say, hey, we're the largest buyer of flash memory.
Right.
What are you going to do for me? You know, that kind of stuff. Whether or not they did it in this case or to what degree is debatable, and we'll probably never know, but this kind of stuff does happen.
And it's part of business, right? And it is. You know, maybe Apple just said, we would like to make sure that we're your most important partner because we're going to make you a lot of money. and that's the way business has been run forever. It's funny. While we're talking about Apple, first of all, do you want to talk about the NVIDIA reports that came out? Because there's
not a whole lot there necessarily. They actually did a little bit better this year than last year. And depending on which analyst you talk to, you'll either see a positive outlook or a negative outlook. Like NVIDIA blames that their GPU shipments decreased on the hard drive shortage. But if you look at AMD's GPU shipments, they actually went up year over year, that kind of stuff. So it kind of looks like maybe NVIDIA is making excuses on some of those fronts. They talked about Tegra 2 orders having a sharp decline, but they said that was because so many vendors were preparing for Tegra 3 and they weren't going to buy more of the Tegra 2. So depending on which camp you necessarily want to stand in, it would be very easy to construe all this information one direction or the other. I think what we learned in 2011 is that not a lot has changed, but 2012 looks like it will be very important for them financially one way or the other because of the declines in discrete and the increases in the SoC market. And how much of that percentage they can actually capitalize on? I think they're out of quarters where they're allowed to say, "We are going to have design wins, and they are going to be awesome." When you're on your third generation of chip, you have to put up or shut up at this point, and we will know. We'll know this year for sure.
Speaking of this year, Tim Cook is first major kind of well, not his first major. But Tim Cook basically doing his analyst briefing this week. Article we found up at a Simco, which I never heard of before, but the title is incredibly compelling. Apple sold more iOS devices in 2011 than all the Macs it sold in 28 years. And Tim Cook, the transcription from the Goldman Sachs briefing. 55 million iPads sold to date. This 55 is something no one would have guessed, including us. To put it in context, it took us 22 years to sell 55 million Macs. It took us about 5 years to sell 22 million iPods. It took us about 3 years to sell that many iPhones. And so the thing is, the iPad is on a trajectory that is off the chart. And it's kind of crazy when you realize, you know, there's... You look at this, and it's like years after launch. So 28 years after the Mac is launched, they've sold about 125 million Macs, and they've sold like 175 million iPhones.
Yep.
Probably, four years now after the iPhone was launched. And the iPad is, you know, in less than 2 years is 55 million units sold. So it's incredible to look at the adoption rate on some of these devices.
Does this explain why Mountain Lion was previewed today and more and more of the operating system is becoming iOS-like. I mean, they're obviously saying, look, people like this. They like to take it. They like to use this. They're comfortable with it. It just makes sense at this point.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see some of the scuttlebutt. And, you know, you got to take any Apple rumor mongering with a gigantic salt lick of salt. That's just a grain. But, you know, you think about what Intel's pushing in terms of advancing the interface on the PC notebook. We want touchscreens. We want voice recognition. A lot of people are saying that the next generation of the MacBook Pro is going to be, you know, serious. There's going to be a serious jump on the next, you know, round of MacBooks. And, you know, is that going to be a touchscreen? Is that going to be Siri? Is Siri going to be integrated into OS X? You know, I'm a little, you know, I'm not really excited about software updated being integrated into the Mac App Store. You know, it's, you know, Apple confirmed, like in an article on ZDNet, Apple confirmed to ZDNet this evening that it is streamlining third-party additions and software updates along with operating system releases into the Mac App Store. You know, which makes me wonder at, you know, how long is it going to be before Apple manages or forces the Mac operating system, you know, OS X to be as tightly controlled as, pardon me while I put the link in here so that Chad and everybody has it, you know, how long it's going to be before they manage to lock down the operating system and the ability to install applications on it, or the ability to extract revenue from the applications as tightly as they have in OS X, as tightly as they have in the iOS. Certainly it sucks as a business user to deal with some of what's going on with OS X and tying OS X. Yeah. It's like, oh, you're gonna need your user ID, and it's like, well, crap, man. We've got like 40 Mac notebooks in the office, and every single Mac notebook that's running the latest version of the operating system, and then with the next version of the operating system, it sounds like they're going to be locked into using, you know, the user ID, and that's a nightmare when you're dealing with, you know, people coming to a company, leaving a company, you know, managing it. And at Apple, it's obvious that Apple doesn't really care about the enterprise market, but I'm not entirely sure what they're doing. It's like, okay, built-in Twitter integration, hooks to Apple TV, iMessage, reminders, notes, iChat. I'm just not really sure, you know. I'm just not really sure where they're going with Mountain Lion.
I don't get it, man. It just doesn't seem like a...
I agree.
You know, it's like, wow, it's like I'm going to start, you know, being really happy about spending more quality time with the PC, where an operating system acts like an operating system, and then it's, oh, crap, look at Windows 8.
Yeah. We're going to be the old curmudgeon-y people very soon.
I think we already are. Well, I am.
You put another link in here for the ASRock review over to Nontech, ASRock Core HT Server Edition review. I had not seen this yet. This looks pretty impressive.
It's an interesting box, right? So Nantech has done reviews of earlier Core HT box from ASRock. So it's Sandy Bridge Core i5-2410, Intel HM67 chipset, 4 gigs of DDR3, you know, Intel HD graphics. And what's kind of funny about this one is they dropped two 500 gigabyte 7200 RPM Western Digital Scorpios, I want to say in RAID 0. Which is like kind of what's new about this particular Core HTPC. But it's an interesting, this is their mid-range home theater PC. So they've got the ASRock does Ion-based machines at the low end, Vision 3D units at the high end. But this is kind of an interesting idea for a small home theater box and just exactly how much you can stuff into a relatively small form factor on
that
one.
It's all using notebook components.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's usually when you find... When you get to a certain point, you can't really use desktop components anymore, or maybe it just becomes, from a power standpoint, the power consumption for the notebook components is a little more attractive than the power component, or basically the power consumption on desktop components. But
now there's no discrete GPU in this at all, though, is there?
No,
right? So
I'm pretty sure there's not going to be with that.
Yeah, so for gaming, it's not. it's not going to be a great, like,
no, it's going to be a hideous gaming box.
Yeah,
but it's kind of funny for a home theater box, for a basic home theater box, or something you can use to serve media around the house. I think it's got potential. It's just always interesting to me to see what people are doing with the super small formats. I mean, you know, not the cheapest devices out there. I think you're looking at about $500 for this machine. You know, but it's not, you know, unlike an Apple TV, it'll play Blu-ray.
It also runs about 65 watts under full load. So
that's pretty manageable. And it's got USB 3.0. HDMI audio pass through, THX Studio Pro, BGN Wi-Fi.
I think it could use a little improvements visually. It's not a very cool looking thing, I guess. Not a very sexy.
And the nice thing about IR blasters, you can put the wireless HDMI is getting good and affordable. Actually, Robert Heron on the last episode of AC Nation and Techzilla did a roundup, and for $250, you can actually get a decent wireless HDMI product that also acts as a switch and also acts as an IR blaster. So you can stuff everything in the closet. And that's what I'm working on in my house, is putting like the Blu-ray player, the receiver, and everything is hidden. And then an IR blaster allows me to run everything from, basically I can point my remote control on the screen when actually everything is behind me and in a locked room.
That's so good. Yeah, we're going to do some of that stuff at the new office, too.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Take a moment to thank our friends over at Netflix for
sponsoring. We should absolutely do that before we get into our emails for this week. We should let everybody know that this episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is, again, brought to you by our very good friends at Netflix. If you haven't heard about the benefits of Netflix, the joys of using Netflix streaming, we're going to tell you about them again, because this time, you're actually going to go to that URL of netflix.com/twit and sign up for their free 30 days of service. Now, Netflix is a streaming service, a streaming option. You know, it's a big benefit to people that are busy. Maybe they're just lazy, one or the other. We'll take whatever we can get. But it does save you time, money, and hassle. You don't have to worry about going to a rental store. You don't have to worry about going to a grocery store, to any kind of box to pick up or deposit DVDs. You're able to stream videos or movies and TV shows instantly, thousands of each. You can watch them on your Mac or your PC, which is maybe it's not the most comfortable thing for you, but you can watch them on your iPad or your iPhone or your Android phone if you're on the go. You can watch them on your TV if you have an Xbox 360 hooked up, a PlayStation 3, a Nintendo Wii. Maybe you have a Roku box or an Apple TV or something like that. Or if you have like one of those home theater PCs we were just talking about, you can run Netflix through that straight to a TV as well. So you can get Netflix almost anywhere you are at. And one of the cool features of Netflix is the kind of DVR functionality that allows you to begin watching a show in one place and finish it in another place all automatically. You don't have to worry about trying to sync anything or anything like that. If you're in bed watching a movie, fall asleep, you can pick right back up where you left off on your way to work on the bus or something like that, or while you're not paying attention at the morning meeting on your iPad or something like that. You have all those types of options, which are great. If you travel for work, take your laptop with you. If you have an internet connection at the hotel room, you can watch Netflix. You don't have to worry about finding the local channels on whatever your hotel is. You can watch whatever TV shows they have available on Netflix streaming anytime you want, which is great. And you can watch them as often as you want, as many times as you want. There's no limits. It's an unlimited plan there. And the best part is you can try it out completely free for 30 days to make sure it's a service that you're like. And I think you're definitely going to like it once you try it out. Netflix.com/twit is the URL for that. If you don't like the service, you can cancel at any time, but I don't think you're going to have that issue. This is great for families. This is good for individuals. This is great for couples that want to have access to a lot of media anywhere they go. Nearly instantly. So netflix.com/twit. Be sure to use that URL when you sign up for the free trial. It helps us out. It helps you out. It helps everybody. Let's be honest. We thank Netflix for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware, the entire Twit network, and hope you enjoy watching instantly with Netflix streaming.
Yay, Netflix.
We should take a moment to do some viewer questions. Twit.tv is the email address if you want to ask Ryan and I a question, or you can tweet us at Patrick Norton or at Ryan Shrout.
And yeah, Anthony, I think actually, I was going to say, it is TWICH at twit.tv. I think I'll have somebody set up a forwarding. So, because I saw a couple of emails come in the last 2 weeks where they had sent it to TWITCH at twit.tv. And those tend to bounce back. So we'll set up another forward so we catch those as well for people who aren't spelling correctly.
And I'll work on my enunciation. That's Twitch, not Twit. I've been doing a lot of sounding out with my son as he's learning how to read. Anthony's got a question about the Intel 520 SSD. He says, I'm afraid that you missed the key feature of the Intel 520. Your panel seemed to suggest that people might be willing to pay the premium for the Intel brand name. There were compliments about the performance and use of the SandForce controller. There were even some references to the perception of quality around the Intel brand. I can't disagree with these compliments. They are right on. The problem is the panel missed the key feature. They are worth the premium because they support a password lock with 256-bit AES data encryption. I'm the IT manager for a hospital. We have the obligation and the legal responsibility to protect personal patient information at all times. We generally try to keep it safely in the data center, but there are times when this just isn't practical. If we need to store information on laptop computers, we have to take extra precautions. In the past, we have used traditional spindle hard drives like those from Seagate that support full drive encryption. Well, this provided the security we needed. We missed out on the other benefits of traditional SSD drives, such as high speed, low latency, and tolerance to shock. The Intel 520 SSD gives me everything I need. That is why I ordered several of them within 10 minutes of reading about the performance and security features. You know what? I look forward to finally being able to encrypt. What's funny is it's the 256. You can encrypt a standard SSD. You just don't have hardware acceleration for AES, which is what I'm assuming the 520 SSD does. I should have looked that up before the show. But
it does, yes.
That is actually a giant bag of cool. And on behalf of Ryan and I and Robert and anybody else, I will apologize for not mentioning it. And I lust after this, being able to do this on my notebook just for the sheer unbridled security coolness of having all of your data locked down. And also having read about some of the spectacular acts of stupidity involving personal information, Anthony, on behalf of the entire Twitch, TWICH at twit.tv audience, I'd like to thank you for being so hardcore about securing the personal information of the patients at your hospital.
I am actually getting a little bit of an update here from Alan through our Skype chat here, where apparently this is not an Intel exclusive feature, though. It is a SandForce exclusive controller feature. And as far as he knows, they all have the capability to have that feature enabled. So the Vertex 3 would be one of those such drives as well. Anything uses the SandForce 2200 series of controllers. So all SandForce double encrypts on both ends of the pipeline, according to Alan. So it is not exclusive to the Intel 520, but it is not all SSDs in the market. So if you're looking for SandForce 2200 series, that may be what he's looking for there. So we weren't all the way wrong, Patrick. Just forget to mention that. We have an email from Tony about a Battlefield 3 upgrade. He says he's looking to replace his current video card in his desktop right now. The most stressful game in his library is Mass Effect 1. And it looks great running on my 8800 GTS with a 1680 by 1050 monitor on high settings. He's looking to purchase Mass Effect 3 and Bioshock Infinite when they come out. But during the Battlefield 3 public beta, my system was only able to push about 30 frames per second on medium settings. I would like to play my games at least at medium to medium high with a solid frame rate over 40, and imagine games coming out will be too demanding for my current card. My CPU is a Q6600, overclocked. Don't replace the whole system if possible. Can you recommend a video card in the 2 to 250 or scrap the plan altogether? So it's interesting. First, I'll note, if you pre-order Mass Effect 3 now, you can get Battlefield 3 free if you haven't purchased it already. So that's a good bonus for you there. Also interesting to note, he says he's playing Battlefield 3 on medium settings around 30 frames per second. Remember, this video card that I showed that is $109 requires no external power will run Battlefield 3 medium settings at 1080p at about 40 to 45 frames per second. So this would already be an upgrade. Now, his budget is $200 to $250. I would recommend looking at like a Radeon 6950 or a GeForce GTX 560 Ti 448. It's a lot of numbers and letters. But the GTX 560 Ti 448, which was a special edition that came out right before Christmas last year. And I believe those are still some available. And I think the Q6600 overclocked to 3 gigahertz will be able to last a little bit. You might look at upgrading your 4 gigs of memory to 8 gigs since memory is so cheap at this point. Right. Maybe, I guess this is probably running DDR2 instead of DDR3, so maybe it's not as cheap as I thought. but that puts it in perspective. The 8800 GTS, based on the G92 GPU, was at one point a fantastic video card. And now we have this that doesn't require any external power, runs at 55 watts card for about $100 that outperforms it pretty easily. So, yeah, that's nice. And if you get something like the GTX 448 or the GTX 560 Ti 448 or the 6950, you'll have room to grow with that as well if you want to go up to a 1080p monitor or multiple 1080p monitors. So keep that in mind.
Multiple 1080p monitors of joy. Matt's got a question about a home theater PC build. He says, I've been wanting to build a media center PC for watching Hulu, Amazon Prime, and other streaming sites. I currently use Diversity and my Xbox 360 for streaming 98% of my TV watching, which is an awesome way to do it. Xbox 360, an outstanding media device, home theater device. He says, I don't have access to sites like CBS, OPB, and other networks that are not on Hulu, Amazon, and Netflix. To get these shows, I drag my PC over to the TV and plug it in, which can be annoying. So I want to build a small media center just to handle my TV watching. I was looking at the Zotac NVIDIA Ion Mini ITX, but that looks to be getting old, and I was wondering if there is anything better mini ITX style setup. And is the NVIDIA Ion chipset a good deal? I do plan to stream HD, and this little board be able to produce 1080p? I was thinking of getting a Google TV, but the browser is blocked by so many sites. Is there a better option in that hype? yeah, the Atom Ion stuff is definitely getting a little long in the tooth. You had a pretty good link on here looking at the Fusion AMD devices, basically, which is the Fusion AMD, a motherboard CPU combo. Those are all around $100 to $140, I think, if you push it. And that will definitely get you 1080p video, Blu-ray decoding, should you choose to put a Blu-ray player in the box. You know, it's interesting. Home theater PCs, Robert's really frustrated looking at home theater PC builds right now. Not so much because Windows 7 is fantastic. Windows Media Center is fantastic. But while we've heard all of this hype about the interface on Windows 8, we haven't heard anything about what's going on with Media Center support. So, like, just about the time we get all of these really amazing cable card options that work with home theater PCs, you know, Windows seems to be like, yeah, Microsoft's like, you know what, screw it. We're walking away from CES. We're not going to talk about, you know, Windows Media Center in Windows 8, which in some level doesn't really matter because, A, Windows 7 is still going to be running great for a while, for years now, and B, there's so many radical alterations in the interface of Windows 8. You know, everything else is kind of a minor sideshow at this point. But, yeah, I agree with you. The NVIDIA Ion stuff is getting a little long in the tooth. Will it play 1080p? It should actually comfortably decode Blu-rays and stuff. But I think, Ryan, you're on the right track looking at the mini ITX motherboards with the Fusion AMD combo.
These are going to be a little bit more power efficient as well. There's an ASUS E35M1i that is passively cooled as well, which would be a nice plus for a home theater PC. MSI has a couple of really nice ones as well. They do have like kind of the smaller fans, which can be a little bit troublesome in terms of noise. But the MSI E35 IAE45, which is odd. E45 uses an E350 GPU. But, you know, you can find those for under $100 after rebate, about $120 before rebate, that type of thing. And it's got your CPU and your GPU and your motherboard all in one. And then you just add some memory and add a power supply. You could also look for some of these. I don't know if they have any of these that actually utilize the external power bricks instead of internal power supplies, which if you can find one of those would give you more flexibility in terms of what you can, what kind of cases you can put it in and stuff. I think all of these are actually using ATX power supplies, but for these, you can even get, I actually have some here. I don't have them close enough for me to reach for them, but the ATX power supplies that are then powered by an external power brick. Right. So it's got an ATX connection inside, and then you, for the external connection, you would just have a plug on it. So those exist as well. And I think you can get those for like $30 on Newegg and stuff like that too. Those are little tips for home theater PC builds. Let's do, this is an interesting question from Derek about multi-monitor power consumption. It says, hi guys, like the show and could use some advice on my multi-monitor setup. I've been obsessed with power consumption ever since I got a UPS that monitors power usage. It's amazing what happens when you are suddenly consciously aware of those types of data points. You got a Sapphire 6950 card and happy with the power consumption for single monitor, but when a second monitor is enabled, the power consumption close to doubles. I've monitored the CPU processes, and that does not change at all. So I assume the additional power usage is coming from the GPU. This is not restricted to a second monitor that is connected to the GPU directly. I have an iPad and use iDisplay as well as xDisplay, and when those monitors are enabled, I get the same result. The power consumption of my system goes from 130 watts to 230 watts. I've read some discussions about this problem specifically related to the heat of the GPU. This is also a problem because I enjoy not having to hear my computer running. By just enabling a second monitor, the noise of my system increases a lot. For these reasons, the GPU thinks need more power. What advice can you give me? I have seen this before. I thought it had been a problem that had been solved, though. We saw this, I believe, with the GTX 590 at one point. So what happens is, if you have, this is not a great example because it doesn't have two DVI ports on it. But if you had one monitor hooked up, he was saying he's getting 130 watts idle. Hook up another monitor, all of a sudden, you know, you're at a Windows desktop at idle and your power consumption jumps significantly. He's saying it going up to 230 watts. What would be, you could be 100% sure it's a GPU if download a little tool called GPU-Z, GPU-Z, and it lets you monitor your GPU clock speed and memory speed and that kind of stuff. Go open it up, look at the GPU clock speed with just one monitor connected, and then plug in a second monitor or enable a second monitor and see if that clock speed goes up. My guess is that you will see the clock speed go from something like 50 or 100 megahertz to something like 400 megahertz, which is kind of one of the intermediate P states for the GPU. That should be fixed in software. I would ask what version of the driver he's using, how recently he's updated his driver, because as far as I know, these problems have been fixed on both AMD and NVIDIA architectures. It wasn't a hardware problem necessarily. It was more something they could fix with vBIOS and drivers. So depending on how old the 6950 is, if it's returnable or RMAable, you may be able to contact Sapphire and have them return it so you don't have to worry about trying to flash BIOS on that yourself. Or just returning it and buying a different model that maybe turned out to be newer as well. So you can make sure it's a GPU by using that tool, the monitoring tool for the frequency there, and then check to make sure you're using the latest software. 12.1 is how 12.2 is out in some form. But if you're using anything like 11.12 or 11.11, it should be fixed because those have been, you know, the 6950 is not a brand new product. If you're using a driver out of the box, for example, you might be having a problem. So I would check that.
It's always the little problems. Interesting question from Ben about touchscreen panels. So I have a question about my sanity in my next computer build. I'd like your opinion. We are not mental health professionals, but we'll do our best to be of assistance. Ben says, I work for a company that makes industrial touchscreen computers, Dynex Inc., but along that route, they make large format touchscreens as well, 32 to 70 inches. That's cool. We're getting in a new 32-inch panel that has 24/7 runtime rating, 1080p, LED, and from talking to my boss, it is a very good panel. He gets to test it today. So Ben's question is, I want to get three of these that will run longer than anything that I can buy consumer grade, that I know exactly how they are built, for about $1,200, or should I just go with three other panels? And yes, three is how many I read. P.S. These will not have touch built into them. Also, is the next NVIDIA GPU Kepler supporting more than two outputs? $1,200 is not a lot of money for three 32-inch panels. You know, that's probably, you know, if these are full on industrial grade, have excellent color, You're super happy because you know how they've been built. That's awesome. Before anybody in the audience is like, that's a fantastic deal. Remember, you know, a 32-inch 1080p monitor is essentially a television, an HDTV, right? And when you get to HDTVs, the prices are a lot lower because we're not looking at those super cool high-end 2560 by 1600 resolutions. Right. So, you know, I'm like, hey, you know what? If you're getting a smoking deal on some industrial grade monitors, go for it.
Are these touchscreen monitors? Is that I'm insinuating no. that they make in touch industrial touchscreen yeah. computers?
Yes, these will not have touch built into them. Like 32-inch touchscreen, you know, panels. That would be an insane deal. $400 for a touchscreen would be an insane deal. But a high end with if the color is good and you're looking at something the equivalent of a nice IPS monitor, yeah, I'd say go for it. 32-inch computer panels should be industrial computer panels should be built better than a 32-inch HDTV. Color fidelity is always a question, but you're going to know the stuff that's available at your company. I say yeah, go for it, man. You know, if it was me, I would much rather have, you know, higher resolution 32-inch panels, because if these are going to be in a situation where you're like, I am going to make my ultimate 3-panel flight simulator, 32 inches is a little big for 1080p if it's really close. If they're across the room, you know, if they're at the far end of the desk, 1080p, you know, because basically the problem with using, because people are like, oh, you know, I'm going to get a 55-inch, you know, HDTV and use it as my desktop monitor because that's going to be super huge. And it's like, yeah, you know what else is super huge in a 55-inch monitor? You know, it's the same, you know, 1080p pixels. It's the same number of pixels, but as the monitor gets bigger, the pixels get bigger. And you don't notice that when it's 8-12 feet across the room. You do notice it, you know, if you bring up the kill factor, you definitely notice it when it's like 3 feet away from you. You know, if you sit with your monitor arm's length away, 42-inch flat panel that's 1080p, the pixels are going to seem huge. Bother you a lot, but that would be my only caveat. It's 32-inch panels. Those pixels are pretty big, and, you know, if they're kind of closer than 4 feet, you may start to really notice how big those pixels are. But, you know, if you're not going to spend $700 or $900 to get a 27-inch, you know, WQXGA or, you know, 2560 by 16 something monitor, then yeah, I'd say you may as well support your company, especially since you know how they're built and the specs they're built to. It's always nice to know that things are built better.
Yes.
I don't think Kepler is going to support more than two outputs, is it? Next gen GPUs? It might.
Yeah.
It will.
But let me just say this. AMD has done it since the 5000 series, maybe the 4000 series. And if they don't support at least three outputs, they've done something really wrong. it'll support more than two outputs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody I told you guys that, okay?
That's just an educated guess.
Yes. That's exactly what it is. I'll just say if they don't do it, they're crazy and they're going to get destroyed for it. When the product
or at least mocked.
Yeah.
We got probably time for one last question.
Yeah, sure. Email from Jay about Windows 8 and gaming. Hello, Ryan and Patrick. He has seen every screensaver there was on TV with Patrick on it.
Whoa.
So there you go.
That's a lot of television,
big,
dude.
big time fan. I have a general question about Windows. I am a gamer and play games like Civ 5. I run Windows XP, an AMD processor, and it takes 3 minutes to load the game. When I upgrade my computer to a new system, should I go Windows 7 or wait for Windows 8? Will Windows 8 be DX12, and which is better, AMD or Intel? So there's a lot of kind of anecdotal questions here.
Well, if you want the game to load faster, get an SSD and install the game on the SSD.
So it doesn't really tell us what hardware he's running. It just says AMD. I mean, if he's on an AMD 486, that's obviously the problem. Windows 7 or Windows 8? What do you think, Patrick? I don't think there's no reason to wait for Windows 8.
No. Windows 8 is going to be Yeah, Windows 8 is going to be like there's going to be a public preview in the relatively near future for Windows 8. But Windows 8, I don't worry about Windows 8. Windows 8,
it does bring DX11.1,
right?
But it's a very minor change, and I wouldn't wait for that, especially since it's not going to be out until the end of this year, maybe, type of thing, right? So 3 minutes is a long time to load up a game of Civ 5. Windows 7 is the way to go still. Yeah, I would do that. And then in terms of which is better, AMD or Intel, that's a loaded question. It all depends on what you want to spend. I will, of course, recommend PCPro.com/leaderboard as a terrific spot to begin your search for PC components on what you want to build and upgrade to. Obviously, it sounds like if it's a really old machine, you're kind of going to start from scratch anyway. So that gives you a good idea of what to go from there. AMD or Intel, you know, either one is going to work, honestly. Intel is the most popular choice right now. But if you buy an Intel FX 8150 or whatever, they're still not bad parts. And they're going to be way better than what you have today. And then like Patrick said, get an SSD if you want something to load faster. It's expensive in terms of cost per storage unit, cost per gigabyte. But they are the hot trend in PC. And PCs and notebooks and they're the hot trend in computing right now just because of their extremely awesome speed. So,
and if you play that game a lot, you could save yourself an hour or two and sitting around a month. You could save yourself hours and hours.
How much is your time worth? That's what you got to think.
And it's kind of funny how it starts to add up. You know, it's just I love my SSDs. And with that, we're going to call it for this episode of Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. Every week, you may have noticed, we talk about the news in hardware. We answered your questions about hardware. We occasionally dip our toes into, you know, phones and tablets. And we certainly love notebooks and talk about them a lot. We want your questions. Twitch, T-W-I-C-H, at twit.tv is the email address. At Ryan Shrout for Mr. Ryan. At Patrick Norton. This, of course, would be the Twitter addresses for the two of us. What's coming up on PC Pro this week, man?
What do we have coming on PC Pro? We got more GPUs to test. We've got retail versions of a couple of new cards. We've got 7950s to test that are in and overclocked. We are going to have, actually, I have this open right now. We're going to have a review of the Lenovo ThinkPad T420. And we've got a couple of interesting cases, micro ATX tower enclosures from Silverstone that we're going to take a look at. There's a lot of cool stuff coming up. And a couple of things we can't really tell you about.
A couple things that will involve Ryan being sued if he talks about them.
Yeah. How about on Techzilla? What do you guys got coming up?
We pre-recorded Monday's episode because of President's Day being a holiday and the studio being closed. So we kind of went nuts talking about emergency power supply. And a viewer is like, okay, I've got my 3-day, my bailout bag, but my big problem when the power goes out. And the power goes out a lot in the part of the country this man just moved to is how do I keep my cell phone running? How do I keep an iPad charged for the kids? We talk about sort of emergency power supplies for your technology, how to resell your electronics and get decent money for them. And an interesting aside on whether or not laptop cooling devices are worth the USB power. They suck.
That is interesting.
And we discuss in great detail my personal favorite notebook cooling device that won't cost you a single penny. At least if you have a desk in front of you. So that's what's coming up at Techzilla.com.
Nice.
We're excited. I think that's it for this edition of Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Shrout.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.
Patrick, have you ever seen a Coca-Cola freestyle machine?
No. I never even heard of a Coca-Cola freestyle
machine. Neither had I until earlier this week.
So I love them.
Oh, you've used them?
They're the best.
So they have Coke, Diet Coke, Coke Zero, Sprite, and that kind of stuff, Fanta, and
is
all these drinks.
Does it pack syrup inside of it?
And then you can add whatever flavor you want to it, like orange, peach, lime, grape, strawberry, raspberry, cherry, vanilla.
Right.
So there's no vanilla Coke, you just get a Coke and then add vanilla.
Wow.
The idea of like a strawberry Diet Coke or cherry Diet Coke already exists, but there's
yeah.
It's pretty great. Awesome.
It's amazing.
Like I'm going to go to a restaurant that has one of these only because I did a search to find one on the thing so I could go use it.
Right.
So they're genius.
Yeah.
Okay, so these are restaurant dispensing devices.
Yeah, well, so like, it's
funny. SF General Hospital cafeteria, because you go to coca-cola-freestyle.com and you can punch in your zip code. Oh, Wingstop, Fuddruckers, Denny's.
See, there's tons of them out there. There's not as many out here in Cincinnati yet, but we're working on it. I'm going to see I wonder how much it would cost to get one at the office.
It's basically the syrup contract, dude.
So they're doing a really interesting thing with the syrup stuff. It's in these little canisters that look an awful lot like inkjet cartridges. That's how they at least the flavors do. I don't know if the syrups do.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Syrups come in bulk boxes.
Yeah.
I don't think it makes sense for them to move away from like the massive kind of infrastructure they built around those things.
Yeah.
I don't think I want to sign a syrup contract. I guess I'll not get one of those.
Well, you might find out it's a lot cheaper than canned. You know, there's you know, call
it's
got
to cost a lot. Like I imagine that everybody wants one of these, and that they just can't make them fast enough, type of thing.
They are profoundly slick looking. Wow.
All right, I'll do an ad read. We need a title. Look at that. High-tech burrito.
This is San Rafael, though. That's the next town over. We have a high-tech burrito in Petaluma, but...
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
I know. I got excited there for a second, and then I realized...
Wait a minute. I think I may have pictures of the inside of the Coca-Cola Freestyle machine.
Oh!
Yes.
100...
Somebody do that research. Somebody try and find out how I go about ordering one.
Well, on the Google thing, the next is cost.
Oh,
on the
okay. What's the Yahoo
how much
answer?
Does it cost?
Oh, $2,000. That's easy.
What?
It's a tax write off, dude.
We're getting one for Twit. We are so getting one for Twit.
That's awesome.
And by that, I hope all the time you save
when you prevent your employees from leaving. The PCPer.com office.
I was going to get a mini fridge. Screw that.
Well, we buy so much Coke.
Yeah. Is it really that big?
Yeah, it's large, and that screen is a touch screen. So so you're gonna. What's funny is I watched a thing on this when they were first making them, and they said that they had to redesign the hopper that collects the excess fluids at the bottom because people would take a taste of whichever one they wanted and then they'd pour it out and and so they had to redesign the whole hopper to accept more because people were pouring it out in the thing.
This is crazy. They are moving away from so basically if you've never worked in a restaurant, soda syrup comes in a 5-gallon bag. They have these boxes and boxes of soda syrup. So they've turned the 5-gallon, they've basically gone for ultra concentrated flavor. So it's now a 46-ounce cartridge is equals a 5-gallon bag worth of flavoring. Quote, but from this Fast Company article, the cartridges also track exactly what's being dispensed in real time.
So it is an inkjet thing.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you guys get one of those at Twit, I'll move up there. I'll do that show up there.
That provides a continuous data stream to Coke about what's catching the consumer's fancy. So you could, for example, track how a new product performs down to the ounce shortly after its introduction. Wow.
You use Coke with lime? Points out in the chat room, the closest one to me. Thank you. La Rosa's Pizza Newport. 22.6 miles.
You're going to drive 22 miles to try one of these?
To get a Diet Coke with cherry or raspberry flavor in it or something.
Yeah.
I can't believe there's not a single picture of the inside of this machine. Oh, wait. I found pictures of the cartridges.
I'm sure that they have them. One second. Let's find it.
This is awesome. There's like, they do like a double cartridge for.
I didn't mean to totally derail everything at Twit.
We're getting one of the. Oh man, I want one so bad.
They have like a double.
I don't think that video in the middle is about Coke. Can we get
one from the studio? I want one so badly.
It does have caffeine-free diet. Caffeine-free, Dave.
You mean the brown water?
Yeah, that's what I drink. I drink brown water.
I admire. Actually, I just. Wow. That's just. I'm really tripping out on this.
Gotta have one.
You know, and I know where there's one actually very close to me on the way home.
Just ask
perhaps I should report and investigate. The problem is it means going into a Fuddruckers.
Yeah, it's worth the sacrifice. Let's do the ads.
Fuddruckers experience I had.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Where is that? Here we go. See, now I feel like the title of the episode should be like Freestyle Coca-Cola, but we didn't talk about that on the show. 3, 2.
Here's the inside. So there he goes. That's what the inside looks like. It's just like an inkjet printer. See, those kids love it.
I love my Coke Freestyle.
You can't be mocking it because you just spent like 9 minutes.
I know. I know.
Broadcast, dude.
I know. Well, this is CNBC talking about the Coke Freestyle.
Yeah, this is news. Coke Freestyle. People love it.